You're now listening to episode 356 on the Flip Empire Show, and my name's Alex Pardo.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
Before we dive into today's masterclass expert interview, I want to let you know that this show is sponsored by Ascend, our in-house assembly of success-minded people, business owners, and entrepreneurs actively collaborating together to ascend our businesses to new heights while also experiencing truly happier, more fulfilling lives at the same time. We believe it's not an either-or, but you can truly have both and. It's the unique and rare combination of mastermind coaching and community that makes Ascend so special. But it's definitely not for everyone. If you're an entrepreneur who's looking for more than your typical mastermind or coaching, and you think these things can help you accelerate your ascension from where you are today to where you want to go, while living a more meaningful and rewarding life in the process, then you can head over to ascendyoursuccess.com, click the application button, and we'll go from there. What is up? We are back with another masterclass with the one and only John Martinez. This is actually John's third go around here on the Flip Empire Show. First couple episodes we did with him. If you guys want to check it out, we get into the nitty gritty of sales and acquiring more properties by taking sellers through a sales process. Go to flipempire.com/episode78. And flipempire.com/episode80. So definitely check out those other podcasts I did with John. We will include those resources in the show notes page. And in this particular episode, we went in a completely different direction. And I'm so glad we did. So John has a lot of amazing content when it comes to REI sales, acquisitions, negotiations, etc. However, what many people either might not know or just haven't even really thought about him, because so many people think about him as the sales guy for real estate investors and just improving conversions, etc. People don't realize that John has built an incredible lifestyle business that consistently produces six figures a month in profits with a tiny team, low overhead, and he works 2-3 hours a week, I believe it is. And so, you know, in a world where we're constantly, you know, you constantly hear so many people pushing the grind and the hustle type mentality, John has approached business from a completely different direction. And it really, really resonates with me. And so on this episode, you know, we get into exactly how he built his lifestyle businesses. And I say businesses because he's got multiple businesses that generate so much income for him, and it's on his terms. He has so much free time. It's him, it's his wife, and it's an assistant. So it's three people. They operate on minimal overhead, and it produces well into the six figures every single month. And then we also talk about not just how he started with, you know, the vision he had for his life, but we also talk about, okay, how did he actually generate the leads, and like, what's the marketing look like? And then what's the sales process? And then what's the automation behind how he does all this? I mean, he has really mastered marketing, obviously sales, and then automation. And he's been able to do this and again, work and achieve that revenue by working less than 3-4 hours a week. Which is pretty impressive. So John's a really good friend. I think you guys are going to get a lot out of this podcast. I know you're going to get a lot out of this podcast. Most people that have John on their podcasts or on their shows are talking about sales, acquisitions, negotiation, which makes sense because the guy's just a ninja when it comes to that. And he's so, so good at it. But there's a lot more that he brings to the table. And I wanted to take this interview with my buddy John in a totally different direction. So let us hop right in. Thank you. All right, guys. I always say I am excited to be able to host this show and hop on another masterclass, but I got to say I'm interviewing a good friend and somebody who I really look up to and admire, one of my favorite people in our space, somebody who's added just a tremendous amount of value to my life and our business, Mr. John Martinez. What is up, brother?
And Alex, always good to chat. Whether it's on a podcast or not, I always enjoy it.
Thank you. Well, again, before we even get into what we're going to talk about today, and just to tease the audience, you know, people hear John Martinez's name and you think sales ninja, you think marketing, sales automation, and you've provided, I was sharing with you before we recorded here, you have so much great free content out there on YouTube and other podcasts you've been on. And I wanted to, we've already had you on the show, episode 78 and episode 80. It's one of the highest downloaded shows that we've had. And instead of going down that rabbit hole, which would be awesome and very valuable for people, I thought, why don't we take this in a little bit of a different direction? You are someone on Facebook, on social, we hear about all these entrepreneurs wanting to grow and scale and volume and do more business and have a huge team. And I was going down that road. I've been going down that road for the last couple of years, and the last 3-4 months, I've really realized that's just not what I want. You have built a business that serves your lifestyle. It's a lifestyle business. You do very, very well, and you're not killing yourself grinding and hustling like it's so glorified out there these days. So why don't we jump into that? Realize that's very vague and general, but we'll start to kind of drill down. Tell us, for people that might not know who you are, why don't we start with, obviously, you're a sales trainer. Yeah. You've worked with some of the largest companies out there. You've really built your name in our space by working with some of the top real estate investors in the country. So why don't we pick it up there? How did you end up even getting into our world? And then we'll kind of just go from there.
Yeah. So, it's a story like a lot of other business owners or entrepreneurs. I worked in corporate America for a number of years, kind of climbed that ladder. And for me anyways, I reached the top or what I always thought was the top. And I was just kind of, I wasn't happy. So I took the leap into, entrepreneurship, opening up a business, became a sales trainer, trained a wide variety of companies and industries, and then ended up kind of by accident getting into the REI space. And there was a lot of need there. There was a lot of traction that we gained quickly. So over the next year or so, we had just narrowed focus to the specific REI niche, and that's where we've been since.
Okay. Perfect. And by the way, guys, we will have, as always, in the show notes, a link so you can check out John's REI Sales Academy. A lot of great products and services he offers real estate investors that really want to up their game when it comes to sales and conversion. So we have put our entire team through it multiple times, gone to his boot camps. I've consulted with John on a few other things. So couldn't give you a higher endorsement for whatever that's worth. So let's talk about building a business that serves our lifestyle. Let's talk about lifestyle optimization. And I think I was watching a presentation. You and I are part of a mastermind. Mm-hmm. I was watching a presentation. I wasn't in your room, and you shared something on a slide that kind of blew me away. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, you work 3, maybe 5 hours a week on your core business.
Yeah, I mean, if I really want to just focus on core business and what it takes to just maintain, then it's probably somewhere between 1 and 2 hours a week. And then I probably spend another hour or two kind of tweaking things and trying to improve it and increase revenue. Okay. But that's about what it takes nowadays. Didn't start that way by any means.
Of course. Yeah. So I was just going to make that point that I don't want people listening to this saying, hey, I can generate 6-figure revenue months and just work 1 to 2 hours. I mean, that's a process. You get to that point. But why don't we talk to the investor out there that's hustling, that's grinding, that is just, a lot of wholesalers listen to the show, a lot of other types of investors. You know this business, it feels like a chase from deal to deal. And there's so many roller coasters that we go through as wholesalers and investors. Why don't we speak specifically to those people?
Yeah.
How do we ultimately make more and work less, living the type of life that we want, not what we see on, Facebook or one of the social platforms, right?
Yeah. Well, I think, there's probably a couple pieces to it, and I've never really spoken about it in this kind of a platform, so I'm going to kind of think through and talk through it at the same time. But the first thing that hits me is really simplification through niching deep and being laser focused, because the more you niche, the more you get focused on, hey, instead of wanting to do a little bit of everything, focusing on this is what I do, this is my audience, this is my product or service, the more you can niche down, the simpler everything else becomes, because you build less systems, the systems that you do build are more effective, and you can start to automate things. You can start to leverage yourself. You can start to leverage your resources. You can start to leverage your people. So I think the first step is simplification, and that comes with just being really focused on one or two things instead of, you know, trying to do a little bit of everything.
Okay. Okay, that makes sense. So to take it a step further, for, you know, let's take a wholesaler. Yeah. Would you say these people, because there's always been this conversation of multiple streams of income, and should, do you recommend a wholesaler just focus on wholesaling? The flip side of that is, you know, in today's competitive landscape, if we can only buy a house at 50, 60, 70 cents in the dollar, yeah, we're leaving so much money on the table, and we can't. We can't, you know, we watch Shark Tank and we talk about, you know, you see entrepreneurs and they have multiple SKUs or different services that they can offer.
Yes.
The customer. Where do you land on that balance between focus versus, yeah, offering more services?
So it is a balance, and I do think you need diversification, but I think the question comes down to, what resources, tools, or strengths do I have right now that it can leverage in other areas?
Okay.
So, you know, if you're a real estate wholesaler, for example, and this, I'm going to give some extreme examples just to illustrate the point. The last thing in the world you want to do is, oh, look, I bought a house and it has a used car in it. Maybe I should also open up a used car dealership, right? Because it's completely different industries, completely different resources and skill sets. You're going to run yourself ragged. But what does make sense is, like you just mentioned, is, hey, you know, I'm producing leads, I'm talking to sellers, I'm gaining commitments, they like me, but I'm just wholesaling right now. Does it make sense for me to add another exit strategy to capitalize on what I'm already 90, 95% deep into?
Got it.
Absolutely. So yeah, you want to focus that diversification or those other income streams on what you've already got going on. Leverage what you already have instead of trying to build new.
Yep, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, so I think you had mentioned a couple of different things. The first one is, you got to be niched down. You got to be focused. And it makes sense. You know, you're not going out and recommending people start a whole other business, but there's multiple ways to monetize leads that come into our pipeline. You know, whether it's creative deal structuring, yep, or a listing, or there's multiple ways that we can monetize these leads. So if you're a one trick pony, I think your business is a little bit more vulnerable. Ask me how I know. So what's the next step beyond that? Now that we're lasered in, we're focused, we're niche on our, you know, we're not going out and trying to do apartment buildings and wholesaling and this and that, you know what I mean?
What's the next step? You know, it's really reviewing what you have, kind of drowning out the noise around you and being a little creative. So for example, if I was in that situation, I'm wholesaling, I'm running a typical wholesale business. I'm leaving some money on the table in different areas. You know, the most common way to think is, okay, I need another exit strategy, or I need another market. And either of those could, or both of those could be perfectly suited for some businesses. But thinking outside the box, there could be some businesses that say, well, hold on, maybe it's not real estate at all. Maybe what I end, and what's the simplest way to monetize that stuff? Maybe it's not expanding the real estate business. Maybe it's, oh my gosh, 90% of my business is really lead production. Are there any other people that can use these leads that I don't want to monetize? So then you could get into, well, shoot, what if I set up a subscription program for HVAC people, lawyers or attorneys, retail real estate people? Can I actually set up subscription plans or sell those leads one off? Because now we could have a whole other revenue stream that literally requires you taking your trash and just finding a way to distribute it, right? So it's thinking outside of the box like that. Okay. What I'm always careful of, because I, you know, you said, ask me how I know. You know, I've been in those situations too, where I try to spin something up and it makes a lot of sense. But then what I realize is the amount of work and resources that go into it take me the other way. I might have a little bit of diversification, but I might be spending now 80 or 90% of my time to produce 10% of that little extra income bump. Mm-hmm. That doesn't make sense either. So you've got to start thinking outside of the box. Is how else, I mean, the question is, you know, what resources or skill sets do I have and how do I leverage those, drowning out the rest of the noise and just think independently, right? Because a wholesaler has mad marketing skills. They produce leads. They produce relationships. That's their product. That's their, you know, I hear Roland Fraser talk all the time about your golden goose, right? A wholesaler's golden goose, the goose that lays the golden eggs, that's your ability to market, your ability to establish relationships, close deals, right?
Yep,
that's right. And then you might have some other resources. You might have relationships and other businesses. I mean, you might have a network, but it's that's your golden goose, right?
Yeah.
So you keep that to yourself, but that's throwing off all kinds of golden eggs. And you just think, how do I monetize these golden eggs? Does that make sense, man?
It makes 100% sense. And I love the direction that we're going in with this conversation because, you know, a coach of mine years ago, and he probably got this from somebody, I'm sure, but he told me, ask yourself better questions, you're going to get better answers. And the theme in our business the last 3-4 months is, you know, our team has gone from 8 to 5. And a big part of that has been intentional by design, is just trying to be more lean and more efficient. And we've been asking ourselves, how do we accomplish more with less? Yes. How do we improve efficiencies so that we're not, because this business, it's a simple business, but it has a lot of moving parts.
A ton.
Right? And so one of the things I see you just being a master at, aside from just sales, and you've really upped your marketing game. And I love how, I think months ago, correct me if I'm wrong, you posted a short video on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And I think it was titled The Life of an Entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And you were talking about 3 steps, marketing, sales, and automation.
Yeah.
We're talking directly at wholesalers and investors. Wholesaling is a transactional business. You right, kind of right. just touched on having a subscription type service. What can wholesalers do? Can we continue to kind of drill down a little deeper so that so many people reach out to me and, man, it feels like a grind. I'm hustling from deal to deal. It's become so challenging in my market. Do I open up another market? Do I hire more? Let's have a conversation around that, because it seems like growth and scale just is a constant conversation. But a mutual friend of ours, Christina Kraus, you know, mm-hmm. said a year ago, you know, scale to be better, don't scale to be bigger.
Yeah.
And that really resonated with me. So where do you kind of land on all this?
Yeah, I agree with everything you just mentioned entirely. You know, scaling up, I think most people, it's just the entrepreneurial culture in probably the last 2 to 5 years has really been centered around just do more, work harder. And yes, like hard work is definitely a piece of it, right? Like you can't build anything worthwhile without hard work. But when you're scaling up, it's not just about more work, more work, more grind. You have to step back and think, okay, wait, what's the outcome? The outcome is it's always the same outcome. It's I want more money and I want more time, right? Yep. They don't think that way. Most people think I want more money, so I'm going to sacrifice my time to get it, right? That's kind of unilateral thinking. You got to think both ways. You know, I want more time and more money at the same time. So if that is scaling to be better, as Christina said, it's how do I, you know, get better at all this? I mean, for example, I'm going to give you a real life example. It's slightly embarrassing, but this is like the last 48 hours of my life.
Okay.
So, in our REI Sales Academy, we said, you know what, let's look at a subscription plan. And we said, we'll do some role play stuff. And so we launched it. It took about 24 hours to launch. We left it open for about 24 hours. Within that, we generated about $1,000 of recurring revenue a month, ready to grow. You know, I think it could get bigger. But, you know, with that quick launch, I was already thinking to myself, listen, it took a little bit of convincing to get people to sign up. It's a low price point. We're going to need high volume. That commits me to another 2 hours a month of work, plus probably another 30 minutes a month of prep time. And I just said to myself, do I want to sacrifice 2.5 hours a month for possibly another $100,000 or $200,000 a year? And the answer was, I don't, right? That's scaling. It's more work. You know, my ratios have changed. Before, yep. you know, another couple hours for 100 or 200, yeah, let's do it. But now my thinking has changed. Hey, mm-hmm. if I'm not able to do, you know, a $250,000 to $500,000, if I'm going to add 2 to 3 hours personally that I'm putting into a business, I don't want to do it. Mm. So I decided, okay, no, we're not going to do it because I'm not able to leverage enough. There's only so many 2 or 3 hour time blocks sure. a month that I want to work. And I'm really putting a glass ceiling on that. So I had to step back and go, yeah, I'll make money. Yeah, it'd be pretty easy. Yeah, a lot of people would probably be pretty PO'd at me if I said I was going to sacrifice that money because it requires, you know, like I'm lazy or something. But no, I gotta leverage my time better than that. And to me, I asked myself that question, am I leveraging properly? And it's like, that would be considered a success, but I don't think that's the level of leverage that I want. So I pulled it back.
Okay, got it. Well, let me go a step further back. Most people make decisions. Many people make decisions based on how much money they're going to make without taking into account the time commitment. And when you're saying yes to something, you're saying no to something else.
That's right.
Right. And so walk people through how you got to that point. And I'm not even talking about like generating income.
Right.
Did you first start off with what you want your life to look like? And then, you know, I think in that presentation, you showed your calendar, which was amazing. It was like basically gym Monday through Friday or whatever it was. And the rest of your calendar was pretty much open. How'd you get to that point?
Yeah, I got to that point out of necessity. I wish I could say it was by design to begin with, but it wasn't. It was that my calendar didn't look like that. It was, you know, busy morning till night, and then I'd lay in bed working until I fell asleep. And as I was saying yes to all that work, I was saying no to the stuff that really made me happy, the stuff that made my life worth living, complete, fulfilling. So after I got to that, you know, it's kind of, you hit rock bottom. So for me, I was working so much. I did that for so long in my life. I hit rock bottom and I said, something's got to change. And I started figuring it out. I started to figure out, you know, making the hard decisions. What do I turn off? What do I automate? What do I focus on? And those types of things. And then over the course of the next probably 12 to 18 months, it all started to come together.
Got it. Was it pretty clear for you? Did you work with a coach or with a group, or is this something that you got together with your wife, Amanda, and you, hey, what do we want our life to look like? What do we need to start taking off our plate to free us up to focus on kind of what we're really, really good at? Was it more organic for you, and did it come natural, or did you have a specific plan?
No. So, My wife is actually really good at that. She is really good at knowing what's important in life and turning stuff off to focus on that stuff. And then just working really hard during short amounts of time to get done what she needs to get done, you know, professionally. Okay. So it wasn't really her. It was kind of my own personal journey because she had already figured that stuff out. So it was basically me on my own. I didn't really have a group or anything to plug into. I'm in some high level groups. But I'd say not many, and I don't want to mischaracterize this, but maybe a lot of them, I don't know, we're not on that same journey as I was at that exact period of time. So there wasn't a lot of places to plug into.
Yep.
So it kind of came organically. You would try something, look, did it work? Did it not work? Pull back, try something else, double down on another thing. It's just, it's constantly reevaluating. And I think I watched, maybe it was a Tony Robbins video, maybe 20 years ago.
Okay.
That always still strikes a chord with me with this stuff. And it might not even be Tony Robbins, I don't know, but I think it was. I think he said something like, hey, when you feel bad, when you feel not okay, when you're stressed or upset or angry, you really need to take a step back and say, okay, this is good. This is my brain, my body telling me something's not wrong. So instead of just giving into the emotion, take a step back and go, what is the root cause of that emotion? And is there something I can do about it? That's kind of how I look at the business in life nowadays. It's like, I'm feeling overly stressed or overworked. And I step back and I go, what's causing that? What can we do about it? So just really asking myself that question all the time, whenever I don't like how life is feeling or life is going, I go, what's causing that negative feeling and how do I address that? How do I take some action? And doing that over and over, I guess, kind of leads you to wherever your life should be.
Okay. I love it. And you know, you talk about leading you where your life should be. What are your thoughts on advising people to do what they love and that's where you're going to be most successful versus, look, sometimes you got to eat crap to get to where you want to go, right? And sometimes you have to do things that you might not want to do in order to get to where you want to go. Where do you land on the difference between those two philosophies?
Yeah, a couple ways to look at that one. That's a really good one. So the ultimate goal is to do what you love as much as you want, whether that's work related or personal life related, whether it has to do with relationships or hobbies or whatever. I think everyone's goal is, hey, do what I want to be doing as often as possible. And what I don't want to be doing is as less as possible. So that's the ultimate goal. But there's different ways you can get there, right? Sometimes it's, listen, I'm in an industry. This industry, I don't particularly enjoy it, but it allows me to maximize the time I have doing the stuff I enjoy. So for example, real estate investing, for some people love it. I know some people who say, hey, this is a career I've chosen because I know how to do this very well. I could do it in a minimal amount of time. The offshoot is plenty of income and free time for me to really focus on what I want to do. So, you know, you can get to it that way, or you can have a career or a job or a business, and that job or business might be what you love. Ultimately, yeah. It's the same goal. Do what you want to be doing as often as possible, but that doesn't necessarily mean that your business has to be something that you're head over heels in love with.
Bingo. Yep, agreed. Matter of fact, I think sometimes when you turn something you love doing, like for example, a hobby, into a business, sometimes it sucks the joy out of what you really enjoy doing. So it's a fine line.
Yeah.
One thing I definitely wanted to ask you about on this podcast, John, is I don't know of a better executioner. Is that a word, executioner?
It probably is. I don't know.
Well, if it's not, we'll go with it. But I don't know of somebody better at executing. You gave the example of the role-playing service,
yeah,
that you're offering now. I think I'm not on Facebook a ton, but I think I saw one day you posted something about it, and then like 24 hours later, I think you mentioned it was, that's it, it's filled up. When you have an idea, I think talking about Facebook, you posted something about having a goal to generate a certain monthly recurring revenue, right? When you have a goal, when you have an idea, what's the gap between idea and, hey, that makes sense for where I'm at right now, to actual implementation? Like I see you executing very quickly, but then again, I'm not with you. I don't know what the behind work is.
No, idea to business is usually 24 hours to 7 days to completely launch. And that's this, I mean, because that's the way I work. In order for me to kind of maximize the time doing what I love doing, part of that is thinking, you know, what outside forces are going to help that happen as soon as possible. So, you know, being a capitalist, I look at the market. You know, there's some things we can do in the market, whether we're good or bad at it, or even know what we're doing. The market says, whoa, there's such a need there. We're going to pick it up and do all the heavy lifting for you. You just enjoy the ride. There's some businesses where you have to educate the market. You have to grind for a decade or two to get adoption. And that's okay too. But in order for me to live the life I want, one of the major measuring factors is the current of the market going to automatically pick it up and do all the heavy lifting for me? Mm-hmm. So another real life example that plays into the role play thing that I just did. So I launched within a week, I launched two businesses, exact same time, basically. One was the role play for the Sales Academy. The other one was helping coaches build businesses like mine, basically. Mm-hmm. Now, the coaching type of business, just, you know, kind of what the stuff we're talking about right now, that produced, I want to say 10x the income in half the amount of time. So that told me, and to add on to that, it's like, that's what I really love doing. I love talking about this, right? We're talking about it for free. Like I'm not like, I enjoy it. So I go,
as do I.
Shoot. You know, I say, so that business, the market's taking it. I enjoy it more. So that's an easy decision. Last night I sat down with my wife. We looked at it and go, hey, yeah, both make money. Both are already doing well 24 hours into the launch. One is a definite winner. Let's sink our teeth into this, kind of take the time you were going to spend on one business, double down in the other, build it up quickly, and we'll have that other revenue stream. And it's that supports the lifestyle.
Understood.
So that plays into that as well.
Got it. And John, I'm hesitant to even throw this out there because you're a super humble guy. And maybe if you want, I can do it for you. But I think providing the context helps people. Correct me if I'm wrong. It's you, your wife, and an assistant, right? Anybody else I'm missing there? That's your business. So you got a three person team, and you're generating, well, you know, six figures a month. Let's just leave it kind of six figures a month in revenue from your business, right? So hopefully, and the reason I bring that out, because I know that you probably wouldn't want to share that, but I think it's important to let people know that it's very possible to make a lot of money and work less and not have this huge, massive team and have all these moving parts. I guess really what I've been challenging myself in our business is how do we simplify? Because I think simplification is the way to go with, yes, with the way the market is. And so I'd love to kind of hear your thoughts and kind of speak to that a little bit more, because it's the opposite conversation a lot of people in our space are having about
right,
building a team and hiring and systems and all this, yeah, stuff. The systems are important, but yes, you don't necessarily need a huge team in order to accomplish a lot of revenue.
Yeah. So one of my, I guess, early lessons, one of the most important lessons I've learned, was I knew I needed systems. We all need systems. We all need stuff to run while we're away or while we're sleeping or whatever it is. But my big mistake early on, and that I see a lot of people making, is I tried to first build my systems using people instead of technology and just filling in the gaps with people. So I said, okay, now I need a marketing team. I need a sales team. I need this admin staff. And I started that way. And before it's overnight almost, overhead through the roof, complexity through the roof, results decreasing, and I built this monster. So I go, scratch it all. Let's rethink this thing.
Yeah.
Number one, all these systems that I think I need, let's look at them. And this is the process I do today. It's not really structured, but this is exactly what happens. I go, number one, do I need that system? Is there a different system that's even better? Is there a better way to leverage something? Okay, if that system is important, can I simplify it? Remove pieces, remove connectors, remove conversations, remove any bridges between one thing and the next, and just simplify as much as possible. Okay, now that it's simplified, how much of that can I automate? When I get done with all that stuff, what ends up is, oh, no people are needed, or one person, you know, is needed for a very short amount of time. So just rethinking through what we think we need people for.
Yeah.
I'm not saying, you know, fire everybody. I'm just saying use them to their best ability, right? Use them where you really need them. Don't just plug them into tasks because, hey, I could automate it, but I don't want to take the extra hour to look into automation. So you just do it every day, put it on your calendar, because that even gets complex. And people, you know, the simpler we can make their jobs, the better they perform, the happier they are, the more money you can pay them at work. So it was that simplification process that I look at everything. So I've done it in every business I've had, and it's really, really served us well.
I think that mindset shift, John, for a lot of people in our industry can be monumental, because, you know, you and I know several people who, you know, we hear about a new marketing channel and then it requires us to hire somebody to just complete that one little marketing channel, like, for example, cold calling or text message marketing. And I think that mindset shift of what you said is, how can technology automate this for me? And then how can I leverage people to fill in the gaps, if it's even necessary, can be a game changer for a lot of people, because I think a lot of us are just wired to think the opposite. Let's create the systems, but we need people to manage those systems. And sometimes technology can just do it for you. Let me play devil's advocate.
Yes.
How do you avoid getting wrapped up down the tech, you know, getting wrapped up in all this tech and automation? Because we've been there before, we say, hey, look, we don't need this person. Let's leverage technology. That's not my skill set. That's not my unique ability. And then I end up having to hire a tech guy spend a bunch of money, and then something breaks, and then go back down that rabbit hole. So have you kind of faced that challenge or not really?
Oh, well, yeah, absolutely, man. And I've done the exact same things. Spent all this time, money, building out stuff that doesn't essentially work. So the way I look at it, and I'm just talking about my business, which might work for somebody, might not work for others. I got to know some of the tech. I'm not techie. I can't code. I can't do anything like that, but just simple tech. And if I can build it quickly, then I do it and I automate it. If it requires a major product or project, I don't take on any major projects. There's no 6 months projects. There's no massive build outs. If I can figure it out and do it myself, I will. If I can use a WordPress, here's all the tech tools I use: MailChimp, a WordPress site, and Zapier to connect them. That's it. That's all the technology basically in my business. That's it. I don't know how to explain it anymore. So I've learned is if I can leverage those, then I'm good.
So what I'm hearing is three-person team, less than a handful of tools and resources. So you have to have pretty minimal overhead, at least by most people's standards. So that, I think that's the other takeaway is you don't need, you know, some people might say, well, yeah, he's generating 100, 200 grand a month, whatever it is in revenue, but what's his overhead, right? And I'm not hearing that you have a lot of overhead.
No. So my overhead is my marketing system's completely automated. The total cost for that is $5,000 a month in ad spend. The MailChimp that supports part of that and the WordPress site is another 100 to 200 bucks a month. So we're probably about 5,200 a month. Got a high level assistant. She's probably 3,600 a month, 4,000, somewhere in there. I'm not exactly sure. Okay. My wife handles, she does finances and that type of stuff. So I'm probably all in at about 10K or under a month. Which it didn't even start that high, but it's just, hey, that marketing machine now runs 24/7, no matter what I do, and leads every day, all day long. And then MailChimp and some of the other automated stuff picks up those leads and it runs them all the way to a point and kind of filters them out and does all the work a human would do until they get to a point of I'm ready to go. And then is where we add human interaction. My wife takes 15-minute calls only with people who say, I'm ready to go, I want to pay, but we force that last bit for two reasons. One, we realize that one of the kinks in our funnel was, hey, if they have questions that aren't answered, they're not going to do anything. So I was like, let's give people an opportunity to ask questions. And the other piece was, is, hey, something that keeps our products great is we don't just work with anybody. It's got to be the right person. So on the other end, it gives us a chance to kind of vet people and make sure we're working with the right people. Right. We limit those calls. Most calls, you know, when I was in the business-to-business world, the more corporate world, every call was an hour. Sorry about this. I'm on my wife's computer and the phone's going off on
it. No, you're good. You're good.
I don't know if you even heard that, but... We now take those calls and we said, we don't need an hour call. Let's make them 15 minutes and see what happens. Lo and behold, you don't need more than 15 minutes. And when you go into it with that expectation, people jump on the phones and they go, hey, listen, I only know we got 15 minutes. So let's get down to business, right? And we get down to business and we accomplish it very quickly. So, you know, for my wife, she'll take a handful of those 15-minute calls a week, not very many. 90% of those calls, I think, turn into sales because we let all the automated all the pieces do all the marketing and selling for us. And it's just that last
90%.
Little piece.
I hear 90%. Wow.
Right. So it's just that last little piece that is just that final human interaction piece that we want there for those specific reasons. Could we automate that? Yeah. Here's a sign-up link. But we think we are leveraging our marketing better. We're leveraging we're increasing conversion rates. We're getting the right customer. So for us, that's when we said, this makes sense to have human interaction. This is what we need. And she's not a salesperson either. So we structure that call in such a way so she doesn't need to actually sell, right? Mm-hmm. We're pre-selling with all the automated systems. And for her, we just, hey, what do we need to accomplish on this call? And any human can do it. She's amazing at it. But so hopefully that just is like a little insight into, you know, how we've gotten to where we are, just kind of the questions we ask ourselves, the conversations we ask ourselves and how we look at different components of a business.
Yeah. That's so awesome. And look, I think a big part of this, again, this is not something you would say, but I'll say it for you, is a big part of the reason you're so successful is because the content, the training, the services you provide are extremely valuable and helpful. At the end of the day, they help people. You can be great at marketing and sales, but you know, if you don't have a valuable product that people need and are going to benefit from, it's probably not long-term sustainable.
No,
in my opinion. So I think that's a perfect transition here as we have another probably 15, 20 minutes max left here on the show. Marketing. Let's talk specifically about content marketing, which is something we've done a poor job of that we need to pick up in our business. And I don't really see a whole lot of real estate investors doing a great job of content marketing.
Right.
Can you just talk a little bit about that? Because, and we can use your business as an example. I constantly see you on Facebook and, you know, just out there putting out videos and just, they're not sales videos, they're content videos.
Right.
And my guess is the majority of your business, if not a big part of it, comes from that, right?
Massive. Yeah. Okay. Before we started content marketing, 90% or more was referral business. Today, as we look at where the leads come in from, it's Facebook and YouTube, 90% there. So the content marketing, we've now transitioned to that's driving all of our leads. which is good. Referral business is the best business you can get. However, super, super scary because you're relying on other people.
Right.
So you want to control the components of your business, which is again, like another decision why we don't do affiliate agreements and stuff like that anymore. I know we experimented with some of that years ago, but yeah. It's because, hey, we're losing control. We had to take that in house. But, so content marketing, we look at it as there's really two types of pieces we put out. Some of the content we put in, and none is salesy, but some of it is what we call belief system content, which is, somebody's going to do business with me, what do they have to believe? What does their belief system need to be? So we want to call that out and we want to nurture it. So for example, if people are going to have me train their sales teams, belief system is going to be, hey, one belief is if I get better at closing, I can work less and get more, leverage my time. I need to believe that to buy John's training. Or, hey, a belief could be, I'm not the best equipped, or I don't want to train a sales team as I'm scaling up. With that belief system, now my training makes sense. So that's me doing two things. I'm calling out to those people, and I'm also nurturing that belief system. Now, the other kind of content we put out beyond belief system content, which is really just to identify who's a target prospect, is tactical content, which is actually helping, proving that we can do what we say we can do. So it's, hey, my business is training salespeople so to buy more houses at deeper discounts. So if you want to do this without picking up my training, here's something you can use today. Go and get real results. And now I don't have to convince you that my training works. You've done it and seen it firsthand. That's how you pre-sell. That's how you sell with your marketing. So those are the two types of content we put out, belief system and tactical content. Okay. And when people see enough of that, they go, okay, belief system, that's me. I believe that we're talking the same language, but can you put up, what you say you can put up? Well, here's a tactical content. Okay. I tried it out. You did it. It works. Where do I sign up? That's content marketing. So okay. The rule behind content marketing is that's the kind of content to put out. And when we talk about leverage, you go, what's the one thing we have, like Gary Keller's book, The One Thing. What's the one thing we focus on? In our business, one thing we focus on is eyeballs on content. So everything we do circles around, that's the one leverage point we have. Can we get more of the right eyeballs on the right content, right? And that's everything we do. Well, does that put more of the right eyeballs on the right content? Yes, it does. Okay. Can we systemize it and automate it? Yes, we can. Well, that's a go. Right? So that's it. The right eyeballs on the right content as much as possible. If you focus on that, any business will blow up because what you'll end up with is this massive pool of people saying, I want to work with you. How do I do it? Right? They will literally call us sometimes or email and say, I don't know what you offer. I don't know what you have, but I've made up my mind. I want to work with you. How do we accomplish that? That's what that strategy accomplishes.
That's awesome. So I want to unpack this a little bit because there's a lot to kind of dive here, but we have a limited amount of time.
Yeah.
For real estate investors, and let me know if I'm thinking about this the right way.
Right.
A lot of investors are direct to seller, you know, and we typically deal with motivated sellers that have some sort of pain, right? So how could they apply content marketing to attract motivated sellers? Is it creating videos, content, whatever, around how to help that person, you know, in their particular situation? They inherited a property, they're out of state. How do they go about the process of maybe selling that property? It could be on that or whatever, right?
Yes, I totally understand. So the way you leverage this in real estate is this. There's two things you want to do with your content. One is attract those people and get their attention. And the other one is nurture them. So there's really two stages to this. It's how do I turn strangers into prospects? That's getting their attention. And then how do I turn those prospects into clients? And that's through the nurturing process. Same way to do both. So what I would do is create content around the people that I'm going after. What do they need help with, right? Just that's a simple question. And now people who need the type of help that real estate investors provide, you know, you're talking about the tired landlords, you're talking about financial distress, you're talking about divorce, you're talking about home in disrepair, you're talking about all those things. Now, there's a lot of those people. However, not many of those people or a very small percentage come to the conclusion on their own or know that it's even a possibility to sell their house to an investor. What I would do is, I think that's getting in too late on the front end marketing. They've already made up their mind. Okay, I'm going to do this or explore this. I'd get in before that. I wouldn't target people who want to sell their houses for cash. Instead, target people and solve the problems that lead them to becoming a client, right? So home and disrepair. Hey, if you got if you've got a water heater that's out, here's some local resources that will fix it. Or here's two things to look at to figure out if you even need to call someone or if it's a, you know, Home Depot $2.99 fix. Tired landlord. Hey, here's a couple of companies that help with, you know, property management or some ways you can structure your lease so you don't have to deal with those issues. We're actually targeting, calling out to people who will become, likely to become, a good percentage are likely to become our prospects in the future, but we're getting out in front of them. Now, while we're actually giving them help with the problems that will ultimately turn them into a motivated seller, the seeding process is essential. Hey, I know this. Here's what I do in a video. Hey, listen, if you got a lot of properties, you're having a lot of trouble with turnover and they're sitting vacant, here's a couple of tips I've learned about structuring a lease and what kind of people to look for. I know this because I do this all the time. My core business is actually not managing properties, but we have a lot because our core business is buying properties for cash from anyone who wants to sell them. Bang, we just seeded. So as we're calling out to these people, you're also telling them without telling them, hey, if you don't want to deal with it, I'll just buy your house, right?
Yeah.
Or you could say, I know this because I talk to probably 200 landlords a year and 20% of them end up just saying, you know what? You know what you're doing. I'll just sell you my house and you take care of it. And we do it, right? So either way, you're helping them and you're also constantly saying, here's what we do. So if you ever get to the point where you say, hey, I'd rather just you buy it, man, you've got credibility. They love you. You've got the attachment. You've got the rapport. So you can see how if you start marketing like that, you get in earlier on the funnel, you cut out all your competition because they love you, trust you. I don't care how many letters they get, they're not, or cold calls, they're not going to contact those people. They're calling you when the time is right. And when they do call you, the selling is 75% done. So you can get better results by using the same systems, right? So
Got it.
I just jumped out a whole lot, but I get passionate about this stuff.
And I absolutely can tell. And I think this is very different than what many people out there are doing. I wanna bridge the gap between somebody that's listening to this podcast and saying, I get it. I understand why I need to be doing more content marketing. How do I actually do it? So is there a particular, I hate to use formula, that sounds so gimmicky, but like, is there a rhythm and a cadence to how much content you need to be creating on a daily, weekly basis, how often you're putting it out? And then obviously you said you're putting it out on Facebook and YouTube, but for real estate investors, especially a lot of the homeowners that we buy from are, you know, 60 plus years of age, and that's not to say they're not online,
right?
But we're not talking about millennials here, right? So what do you recommend for these people as far as the content creation process, you know, videos, blog posts? I mean, there's different ways to create content. So just kind of curious your thoughts.
Yeah, it goes after, you mentioned asking better questions. So I want to kind of pose that question in a different way. You said most of the people who buy from us are older people. Mm-hmm. The question I would ask is that because that's the exact market or that's who you happen to be marketing to your current ways, right? So if you're talking about direct mail, well, yeah, of course, that's the older generation opening that mail. But I work with a lot of investors and I know a lot that, you know, 10 years equity in a house, that might mean you're 30 years old, 40 mm-hmm. years old, 50 years old, not exactly 60 or 70. So part of that question, I don't know if I have the answer for it or not, is, did I come to that conclusion that that's my target market because that's who my target market is, or that's who I happen to be marketing it to, and the feedback's telling me this is who sells, right?
Fair enough.
Older generation, you got to put it wherever they are. So if you are going towards the older generation, then you are going to do mail and stuff like that, and content marketing is going to be a little bit more difficult to do. If you want a content market, then you know you're probably going to be going after some different people. They're probably going to be 30, 40, 50, 60 years old. They're online. Now, my parents are 70 years old and they're both online. So we start to see that change as time goes too, especially Facebook. Facebook right now is the platform. We're seeing 30, 35 year olds now starting to hit Instagram.
Yep.
Everybody is on YouTube, right? How do I do this? Google pops it up. You're going to get 3 or 4 YouTube video recommendations. YouTube is an everyone thing. So as I see that becoming less of an issue as time goes on. And before we know it, there'll be a time where mail is even digital, right? I know we know a lot of business owners who probably have their mail scanned and sent to them. So I think that stuff's all going to continue to change. Cadence as much as possible. Where to start? I would just start with the simple question of who am I going after? Who's my target client and how do I help them? And just help them however you can. And as you do that, you know, it could be, hey, if you're thinking about selling a house, in my opinion, here's the three top realtors in the area. Now, are you pushing them towards realtors? Yeah, but you also say, if you don't want to do that, or if you don't want to fix your house, I also happen to buy houses in any condition. So you have to kind of take yourself out of it and not be so selfish and just give. And as you give, say, by the way, this is what I do too. So you could do that. You could go, hey, we've worked with these three realtors. They are freaking awesome. If you want to sell your house and list it, I recommend these three. If for any reason you don't want to go through that process, or you got a house you got to fix up, or there's tenants in it, or whatever, and you don't want to deal with it, I buy cash as is. But these are the realtors I would personally go to. They are the realtors I personally go to when I buy houses for cash and I sell them. So you can accomplish it all. But again, it's also not being so selfish and just thinking, how do I honestly help these people, but at the same time, let them know what I do? The rest will work itself out.
Dude, and that is so different than what everyone's doing, right? And it doesn't even feel like a plug. You know, you're genuinely adding value and you're saying, hey, by the way, I do this if it's not a fit. And it just comes across so natural and organic. And I was going to ask you, why aren't people doing this? And I'd be throwing myself into that mix. But the answer to that, who knows, right? But it just, I think I wonder if people don't do it because they kind of see it as more of a long-term thing and they're so fixated on the short-term and the results.
Yeah.
That they just never get it going. I don't know.
Right, right. I think you are 100% right. It's a longer term play. We see this work exponentially better as time. It's like compound interest, right? We put all the stuff out there and the longer it stays out there, the more return we get. So it builds over time and kind of snowballs, but it's not a do it today. I mean, sometimes you can get okay, quick kind of results, but not the kind of results like, hey, I could do this month and then turn off all my direct marketing tomorrow. Your business will die. Yeah. It is a longer term play, but I think it is the play. I think if you ever want to get off of that cycle of, you know, deal to deal to deal and always worrying, then you've got to at least start to take the steps to put something like this in play until it takes over that other market. Just like, you know, my story was, hey, it was all like hustle and grind and referrals. And years ago, I started this, and now it got to the point where it reversed. It was slow and steady, and it took 3 to 4 years, but that's the result. So I think you got to. I think everyone has to. And I think the earlier adopters of this in the REI industry are the ones who are going to be crushing it in 4 or 5 years, and the direct marketers are going to try to get in on those leads, but those leads will already be spoken for.
Got it. Last couple questions for you, John. I'm going to give you a scenario and I'm curious what you would do. So let's just hypothetically say I pick up the Martinez family and I drop you into some random city and I give you, let's just say a couple $1,000. The amount it's not really important, but let's just say not a whole lot of money. And I took away your sales business and everything. All you have is your knowledge, your family, dropped you into a city with a little bit of money. Yeah. And I said, hey, you need to start a real estate investing business from scratch. You're obviously great at just whipping up businesses from scratch. The audience is primarily real estate investors. So I dropped you into a city, gave you a few resources and said, you need to start this business from scratch. And you need to do it while still honoring the vision for your life. In other words, not killing yourself. So that's the criteria. You can't be working 40, 50, 60 hour weeks. And you can't be incurring a ton of overhead. All you have is a couple $1,000. What's the quickest way to profits for you while still honoring, let's just say, you know, 15, 20 hours a week, which is not what you
do. Right. So that first level of scale for me would not really be so much technology or automation. That's kind of a more expensive, longer term play. That's kind of like second or third stage. I would first ask myself, where can I take whatever I have and leverage it the most? So I would probably be going to, I would say, okay, who can I develop a relationship with that has a steady flow of my perfect clients? So I'm going to start thinking about skilled nursing homes, senior care facilities, people who run those. I'm going to start thinking about the top real estate agents in the area. Because you know, if they have a top business, they're not just taking any houses. They're taking high profit ones that they can put in their system and blah, blah, blah. So I'm going to look at those two people and I'd probably, you know, $30 or $40 a time, taking them out to eat and telling them how I can help. Just, hey, do you have a problem I can solve? If you have this problem, if you have people that need your medical attention, your help, need to get into your facility, but don't have the funds or are held back because they got a whole lot of stuff to unpack and deal with their previous life, does that not only hurt your client, but hurt your business? Yes, yes. Okay, well, might have a solution. Might be able to fund it, might be able to take care of all those issues. And now we have a triple win. Win for me and my business, win for you and your business, win for the end client because we're helping them get what they need quicker and easier. So it would be those types of conversations that, because that one leverage conversation could turn into, that could be two or three deals a month right there. Two or three deals a month. Even one deal a month, now we've generated enough income to start to move into the, you know, scale technically and stuff like that. So that's where I'd start, is highest leverage point. And for me, those types of relationships, I'd look for one, two, or three that are high leverage relationships that I can build a personal connection with, get to know, and then use the revenue that comes from that to expanding into other areas.
Beautiful. That was awesome. So I don't think, sorry to put you on the spot. I don't think I've ever asked anybody that question, but I thought it'd be a cool way to wrap it up. This is one I typically end with. I think I asked you this when you were on, I don't know, a couple of years ago at this point. Why don't we, I usually say, hey, go back 10, 15 years. What's the one piece of advice you'd share with yourself knowing what you know? I want to kind of condense that a bit. Over the course of the last 5 years, you've done an amazing job of just building up your name and your business within our industry. Look back to that point when you first broke into real estate. What's the one piece of advice you'd share with us about how to go about building a lifestyle business?
Good question.
And by the way, we recapped so much of this in the last hour, but we're just going to boil it down to like, hey, this is your starting point.
Right. So, I guess it is going to come down to the questions you ask yourself. Number one is you got to figure out what your goal is. So what do I ultimately want? Which is, how much do I want to work? What do I want to do in my free time? What's the price tag for all that stuff? That's very basic. Anyone could probably do that in 10 minutes with a scratch pad, right? Mm-hmm. What's important to me? I think one of the guys, his name is escaping me, who's also in CG, out of St. Louis, Life and Air guy, used to be a Life and Air guy.
Sean McCloskey?
Yes. I remember him speaking once and he asked a series of questions. And one of the questions was, if you had so much time to live, what would you do? And the one that really struck me that I think answers this is, if you had maybe 30 days to 6 months to live, how would you spend that time? And if you ask yourself that question, you automatically know it's important to you. It's like, well, I wouldn't grind away for 80 hours a week. I'd probably set my business up so my family could take it over and have some type of revenue, but I'd spend my time with them and whoever I love doing. Bang, that's what your life needs to look like. Now you got your goal. The next set of questions you need to ask is, anything you're thinking about doing, does that get me closer or further to that goal? And you'll run into stuff that's, well, it's going to provide the income, but it's going to take away the time. That's a no. Think of something else, right? Yeah. And just ask yourself that question over and over. And ultimately, I don't think there's any other way or any other outcome but getting to where your goal is.
Gold, my man. Gold. Thank you, buddy. How do we serve you best? How do people reach out to you for the few that might not know who you are, or even the ones that you're already working with? What's the best way we can connect with you and add value to what you got going on?
Yeah, everything can be found from our website, reisalesacademy.com. We got a lot of domains at point there. We originally named the company Midwest Revenue Group. So midwestrev.com, reisalesacademy.com, johnmartinezsalestraining.com. It all goes to the same website. From there is all of our services, tons and tons of free videos, resources, scripts, all that kind of stuff. So that's the number one place I'd point anyone.
Thank you, buddy. Thank you so much for the time, for always just delivering incredible content. And thank you personally for your help and your friendship. So
it's the same to you, Alex. Thank you.
All right, my man. We will talk soon. And guys, thank you for tuning into another masterclass. Do me a favor. I rarely, if ever, ask for anything. If you have enjoyed the show, if you've gotten something out of it, tag somebody on social media, share it with your friends, family. And that's how we can help others, is by just sharing good content and good information that can help them. So that's our only ask. And if not, that's fine. Just continue to plug into the podcast here. So we will connect soon. Take care, my friends.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.